Okay, and one of the most dramatic parshios of the year, we come to Parshas Korach, and the parsha begins, Vayikach Korach, and Korach took. And Rashi cites the famous Midrash about how Korach challenged the ideas of a Moshe Rabbeinu by bringing a bunch of examples. One of them was the idea of a talis that was covered in tchelas, talis shekulo tchelas, whether it needed to have tzitzis attached to it. He also pointed out that if you have a house filled with svarim, so does it need to have a mezuzah. So Reb Mechliud Alechwitz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was one of the great Rosh Yeshiva, Panovich Litzirim, alongside Harav Steinman, the Yibad Lachaim Tovim Aruchim, Reb Mechliud quoted Reb Leib Chasman Zatzal, who noted that Moshe Rabbeinu never answered this question. That's simply because sometimes questions are not meant to be asked. They are merely stated in order to take down the truth. Mechiyuda Zatzal added that the entirety of this parsha teaches us just how dangerous mockery, honor, and leitzanus can be, and that the only way to deal with it is to move on from it. Hibadlu mitocha eida, that's the first lesson of Vayikach Korach. And then immediately after, Moshe Rabbeinu turns to the people and he says, Boker, in the morning, vioda Hashem es asher lo. And the parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu tells Adas Korach, Boker, Hashem will demonstrate who the chosen individuals to serve as Kohanim and Leviim truly are. And Rashi quotes the Medrash that the phrase in the Pasuk has another added connotation. Boker, morning, indicates that just like Hashem sets borders between day and night, so too he distinguishes between Kohanim, Leviim, and Yisraelim. Moiv Rabbi, Rav Shachter Shalita, would often remind us that in the Torah too, there are boundaries that distinguish between Mutter and Aser. But there's also Dalat Amos Shel Halacha. There is a broad, two-dimensional area of mutter, not just a straight line. And so in that way, the Torah doesn't have to tell us that we have to be careful not to get out of line. Rather, we have to be careful not to cross the border into the dangerous land. We have a responsibility to know that there's Aser and there's mutter. But the area of mutter is an area. It's not just a simple straight line. Then Moshe tells them, Rav Lochem b'nei Levi, right? Rav Lochem, woe unto you. And the Gemara tells us that as a result of Moshe's use of the word Rav, he too was punished with the use of the word Rav. In Parashas Vayechanan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, Rav Loch, right? It's enough for you. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz HaTzal asks why he needed to be punished. After all, wasn't he correct? And moreover, if he were being punished, right, if it were indeed true that he was being punished, it wasn't for the Avera, wasn't it for the Avera that he does in next week's parasha with the rock? What's the connection to the word Rav? What's the issue over there? So Chaim Shmulevitz answers that if Moshe wasn't sensitive to the people's request, he should have been sensitive in telling the people that their desire for religious expression was not the will of Hashem. In return, when he needed to receive the same message, but that was the only reason that he was going into Eretz Yisrael. He also wanted further avenues of religious expression. So he was also told, you also don't get the religious expression. It's not so much the fact that he needed to give the different answer. And that's sometimes something we need to think about when we deal with the nations of the world, and even the people within our own nation, who sometimes come up with ideas that are, let's face it, off the reservation. But the fact of the matter is, says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, their ideas may be off the reservation, but they need to be dealt with sensitively if their request is a reasonable request. In today's times, this is a very major problem for us. Because on the one hand, people have gone off the reservation to create all sorts of crazy spiritual experiences that are not authentic Judaism. But at the same time, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz tells us that while there's a spirit, that spirit should never be squashed. It needs to be dealt with in a sensitive manner, even if the opinion, the ultimate decision, is not going to change. So the people turn around, Dasan and Abiram say, they were told that they didn't go to the land of milk and honey, but before that, they were told, Hama'at, wasn't enough that they took us from a land flowing with milk and honey, and Rashbam and Ibn Ezra make it clear that Dasan and Abiram are referring to Mitzrayim when they call it a land filled with milk and honey. In fact, there are 20 times in the Torah where we refer to the land of Zavas Chalav Udvash, and only one of them does it refer to something other than Eretz Yisrael. The question has to be raised, why is this idea of Zavas Chalav Udvash such a critical, important phrase? So the great Tanakh teacher, Rav Elchanan Samet Shalita, explains that the praise is an awareness of the continuation of effortless economic expansion available to the land of Canaan. In other words, putting it simply, in addition to being effortlessly able to produce produce, Eretz Canaan also effortlessly can produce honey and milk. In this case, says Rabbi Samet, it's the honey of Dvash Devorim, the honey of bees, and the milk through the cows. Effortlessly, simply through the land, through the cow, out the bee, creating a bounty of the product. And that's one of the brachos that happens when one is inside Eretz Yisrael. So that's it's juxtaposed in Chumash Devarim with Eretz Mitzrayim, which can't boast those same claims. So accordingly, Rabbi Samet points out that Dasam and Avira were engaging in hyperbole when they challenged Moshe, calling Eretz Mitzrayim the land that's flowing with milk and honey. They had no context to assume so. They knew that, if anything, the land of Mitzrayim was a land that required a lot of effort. Eretz Yisrael was going to be the exact opposite. So Moshe Rabbeinu turns and he makes the following deal. He says, "In Bria Yivra Hashem, if Hashem creates a creation whereby the ground opens up and swallows the land." And Ramban and Sforno point out that there seems to be a creation here that was Yesh Me'ayin, that was from nothing. And the question has to be asked, why? So Rav Gifter Zatzal explained that Korach and his cohorts wanted to change the order of creation by trying to change the Torah's orders. If they received the punishment prescribed by the Torah, it would only serve to prove that the Torah was indeed corrupt in favor of Moshe. By having a unique death, that proved that it was the will of Hashem that punished this evil group, because indeed Hashem went against what should have been prescribed. And then we find that the ground did indeed swallow them up. And not only did it swallow them up, it swallowed all of the rechush. And the question has to be asked, why did all the property need to be taken as well? So Sforno notes that it was so that the tzaddikim would not benefit from anything that was associated with these people. They were so much Rishayim, there should be no association. Chaim Kanievsky Shalita adds that it was the Korach wealth that led him to be a Baal Gaiva. That same wealth needed to be removed, lest it come to corrupt somebody else. And so the pasuk continues that after a while, there needed to be a test. And so we find the test of the sticks. And Aaron stick by yotzitz parach by yotzitz tzitz by yigmal shkedin, that it blossomed into flowers and it budded and it gave off almonds. So the great Rishmuel Brazil Shlita notes that Korach's challenge flew directly in the face of just what a kohen is supposed to be. You see, kohanim are really zrizim; they're supposed to rush in order to help the people, and hence, like almonds, they blossom very fast. Tzadik katamar yifrach keres ba'manon yisgat. Right? He adds that part of the daily bracha that a kohen offers, Yisa Hashem panav elecha v'yasim lecha shalom, is the gematria of Ayigmol Shkedim. So a person needs to understand that when he gets involved in the process, so if he's really a kohen, it's not about him. It's about being zareis to serve the people. And indeed, we find the opposite is true, as the rest of the parasha deals with the questions of Trumas and Maestros, which is what the Kohanim get, instead of the opportunity to work the land. Finally, in the Haftorah, we find the rulership of Shaul HaMelech being chastised by Shmuel HaNavi about the fact that the people wanted to have a Melech, etc. And so, in the course of the Haftorah, we find the following concept raised. Imtiru es Hashem v'avadetem oso ushmatem b'kolo v'lo samru es pi Hashem. Shmuel HaNavi tells the people, if they fear Hashem, and they serve Him, and they listen to His voice, and they don't rebel against Him. The Lutzke Rav of Zalman Saratsky and Zecher Tzadok Livracha notes that we see something pretty incredible over here. One can fear Hashem. One can do the mitzvos. one can follow the word of Hashem and still violate Hashem's plans in order to be considered rebellious. And that's one of the great challenges of the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara can make one look pious and act pious and not be pious. And in our world today, unfortunately, that is quite a challenge for us. We have a lot of people who look and sound and act quite pious, but in point of fact, when we get into their heads, maybe all that is serving is not intense piety. We need to strive to achieve our goals on everything. We need to make sure that what we're doing is the word of Hashem and not some sort of rebellion against His word. Shabbat shalom to all.